This is the Ellipse in Washington, an oval, grassy area just south of the White House, where a crowd estimated to be 75 to 100,000, almost all of them young students, have gathered to make known their feelings against the war in Southeast Asia. And the official atmosphere in Washington today is in marked contrast to the large anti-war moratorium held on November 15th. The president sat in the White House on that day and watched a sporting event on television. This morning he was up quite early, left the White House, went to the Lincoln Memorial, met with some students there, chatted with them briefly, and said of it later that it was most useful. He said there was no press, no TV cameras present. The students didn't feel the awesome power of the White House. And he said, I was trying to relate to them in a way that they could feel I understood their problems. He said later, it was one of the most interesting experiences of my life. The official part of the program in Washington is about to get underway. Entertainment, speeches, something to occupy their time throughout this afternoon on a bright and sunny day in the nation's capital. Let's go now to Washington and NBC correspondent Sandra Van Oker.
Frank, you said a moment ago that it was about to get underway. It is underway right now. It was supposed to start a little earlier than this, but the crowds have been so enormous that it's estimated now that it's more than 100,000. It looks to me like it's in the area of 200,000, and they didn't expect this many, that the people like Dr. Spock, who is the chairman of this day, had a hard time getting up to the speaker's platform. There have been speeches. They are getting a little more passionate right now than they were before. I think the tone was set for the meeting by a man named Ron Young, who is the chairman of the mobilization group that put this all together in about 7 to 10 days. And Young said that this demonstration was different from past demonstrations because the students were coming here today not believing that this demonstration would end the war. They have been that route before, he said. October 15th, November 15th. No, that is not enough, he said. He said that the students have to go into the offices of Congress, stay on in Washington, to try to make the congressman end the war. The point about this crowd, as the November 15th crowd, I think, is that it is essentially, from where we have been standing here for the last 5 hours, essentially a very peaceful crowd. The one thing that's remarkable about covering these young people is the sense of peacefulness and well-orderedness that they have. You'll see medical teams go in when someone faints. The crowd will rise immediately. They'll bring the stretchers right in. It'll all take place in about 3 to 5 minutes. There are observers here formed by the former Attorney General Ramsey Clark to circulate around to make sure there are no incidents. If there are, to report them in case of further legal action at some later date. And what they are worried about at this time is not so much what's going to happen between now and, say, 4 o'clock, but what is going to happen at 4 o'clock when the crowds start to move out and disperse. If you remember on November 15th, that's when the trouble began, when some of the crazies and the violent members of the SDS and weathermen went to the Justice Department for a demonstration, which did erupt into violence. But so far as we can see right now, this is a very peaceful crowd, a very well-disciplined crowd. What will happen in the next 3 hours, we don't know. But our guess would be that these students have not come here for violence. They have come here to bear witness. And I don't think that they are going to get involved in violence if the afternoon proceeds as it's been proceeding right now. That's all I have to say, Frank. Ask me a question.
Pictures that there was a cross that had been erected on the Ellipse. And we have a report here that it is a wooden cross and that a Negro man carried it to the area. And at his own request was strapped to it. He's identified as Daniel W. Billings, Jr. of Cincinnati. And in explaining his action, he said that black and yellow people are being crucified around the world. And he went on to say, we just want peace and brotherhood. So if we see that shot again on the screen, we'll know what it's about. This is the largest demonstration, of course, in the country. There are other rallies being held in other parts of the country and, for that matter, in other parts of the world. Sandy, we got a report from London just a little while ago saying that, and I should emphasize that this was in London now, not in Washington, in London, 50 persons were hurt when about 5,000 anti-American demonstrators broke through some police lines outside the American embassy in the British capital. According to the reports, the crowd hurled sticks at the police, and they shouted, "Kill Nixon, a U.S. pig." But that was in London. Can you tell us who is speaking now, Sandy, or is someone just finished and someone else about to begin?
And violent government against popular movement of resistance and revolutionary change.
What's more, Frank?
I take it you couldn't hear me, Sandy. We're just curious to know who's speaking now. Do you happen to know the identity of the speaker?
I don't know who is speaking right now because we're so far away from it. I think it may be somebody from Kent State, but I'm not sure.
Well, I should be able to come up with his name. I can't. I think I recognize him from some...
Frank, it's Rennie Davis, who is a member of the Chicago 7.
I see. Thank you, Sandy. Well, we'll listen to him for a while.
emergency announcement. Will Jim Robinson, Lisa, Rich and Jane, Carnegie Mellon, please meet Sonny Kim at the BMW Memorial on Constitution Avenue. That's a memorial over here that has a flaming bronze sword, probably by some flaming architect.
Ever seen. No more massacres, Vietnam, Song May Vietnam, Point 10, Ohio. Bring all the GIs out now. I have two announcements. Those who need psychiatric help from the MDs and PhDs from the Hogfather can receive it at 15th and E, which is in that direction.
Excuse me. As you can see, much of the afternoon will be taken up with speech-making there at the Ellipse, and we'll be dropping in and out of there in the rest of the remaining portion of this hour. But as we noted earlier in the morning, President Nixon, I think it was around 5 o'clock, was it not? Around 5 o'clock this morning, said he couldn't sleep. And he got up and took his Cuban-born valet with him, and they made a dawn visit to the Lincoln Memorial. There were only three Secret Service agents with him. The president said that the Secret Service agents were quite alarmed, petrified, as a matter of fact, is the way he expressed it. And at the memorial, he spent about 45 minutes talking to some students who were also there. And the president later said it was one of the most interesting experiences of his life. There were, of course, no cameramen and no newsmen, and the president later went to the Capitol. But later in the morning, some of the students talked with NBC News correspondent Ron Nesson.
Memorial. About, I'd say about 3 o'clock in the morning, we were talking to the patrol there, the policeman there. And as we were leaving about 5 o'clock this morning, President Nixon was going up the stairs as we were going down. He came in, he went to the right, walked in, went to the right-hand side and read the inscription on the wall, then turned and went to the in front of the statue, stood there for a few minutes. And as he was leaving, we were told to step aside as the president walked by. And as he walked by, someone did say, "Good morning, Mr. President," and he stopped and talked to us.
What did you talk about?
We asked him what he was going to do about Cambodia. And
what did he say?
He would try and get the troops out by June 1st. And we discussed Vietnam, and he said that he is against killing also, and that he wants to, you know, home as soon as possible.
Were the other students there in the memorial at the same time you were?
There were a few others. We were just about the only few. There were maybe four or five more. And then as he stayed longer, a crowd did gather.
Were there any militants in the crowd who asked sort of hostile questions?
I would say that there might have been one. He asked Mr. Nixon's opinion on the Black Panthers and in their Chicago trial. Mr. Nixon was very tired, and he looked it, and he really didn't want to get into any kind of debates at the time.
Mr. Nixon seemed to be concerned about talking about something else for a change. Like, he gave us a 15 to 20 minute dialogue on traveling around the world and meeting people. And he seemed to be saying that he is concerned about the individual people getting along with each other. And he wants, you know, like he was just tired, I think, of discussing these issues that are putting all the pressure on him nowadays.
Did you ask him some questions about Cambodia and Vietnam?
No, I didn't.
I asked him a question about if he usually does come to the Lincoln Memorial at 5 o'clock in the morning. Well, he says he usually does go there, and I've heard it's been his fourth time here since he's been president that he did go to the Lincoln Memorial. But I asked him at 5 o'clock, and he says, well, not usually. Well, I guess this is a special day for him.
What did he say about today's demonstration?
He said he did have faith in the youth because the youth of today is going to be the governing body of this nation for tomorrow. And he expressed a lot of hopes in the youth as a voice in government, and he encouraged us to voice our opinions. And as we reminded him, it was a peaceful demonstration, and he, you know, congratulated us on that fact.
Thank you. These are five students from Alfred State College in Alfred, New York, who have been telling what happened to them, or what they say happened to them this morning at the Lincoln Memorial shortly after 5 o'clock, when they say President Nixon came in and talked to them about 45 minutes. Ron Nesson, NBC News, at the Washington Monument grounds.
NBC News correspondent Richard Valeriani is outside the White House. One of the original demonstration objectives was to mount their protest in Lafayette Park directly across from the White House. The compromise between that and Washington Memorial was to permit them onto the Ellipse, which is just south of the White House. But let's go now to Richard Valeriani.
Have it at the Washington Monument grounds. Then they said they would demonstrate as close to the park as possible, which would be at the intersection of H and 16th Streets. Now that caused some apprehension about potential confrontation between police blocking off the park and the demonstrators. The problem was resolved late yesterday afternoon when the demonstrators were given permission to gather on the Ellipse south of the White House. Even so, the police here are taking no chances. A barricade of bumper-to-bumper buses chartered by the city has been set up all along H Street, blocking off the north side of the park completely. The buses are parked up on the sidewalk against buildings at both ends of the park out of camera range. In view of the gathering on the Ellipse, it would appear that this location is no longer a friction point, but police are deployed on both sides of the barricade, and there are troops in some of the federal buildings nearby, just in case. Now, back to Frank McGee in New York.
The size of the crowd in Washington is being estimated by various officials as being of varying sizes. It's extremely difficult to really arrive at anything approaching an accurate figure on a crowd that large. And this sometimes leads to controversy. Those who mount the demonstrations would like the figure to be larger. Those who might have reason to oppose a demonstration or a political gathering or whatever always would like to have the crowd smaller. But among the officials circulating among the demonstrators on the Ellipse this morning is Walter Washington, who is the mayor of Washington, D.C. And NBC News correspondent Robert Kowalski talked to Mayor Washington, got his impressions about the rally, the mood, and his estimate of the size of the crowd.
Mayor Walter Washington of the District of Columbia is one of the officials who is appearing here at this demonstration. Mr. Mayor, some of those who opposed protest demonstrations of this kind say they don't do any good. Do you think they do?
Well, I think they certainly have their impact. I think what we're dealing with is a group of young people. Basically, not just young, there are some pretty old ones, too, who are serious of purpose, and I think they're trying to let their seriousness of purpose be known, their points of view be known, and this expression has to have an impact. I think the important thing is that they remain orderly. I think it's in that we get the greatest impact. When they break down, I think it's counterproductive.
Well, Mr. Mayor, from what you've observed thus far, do you think this will be an orderly group?
Well, I think thus far, I've just walked from Constitution Avenue down to this point right through the crowd, and the mood is serious. The attitude is one of wanting to have a peaceful demonstration. You can't ever tell. We've got lots of rumors and lots of possibilities with a group of this size. But for the most part, the great, great majority really want to see this peaceful and really want to give their expression of their views, and I think the city and the federal government is planned so that they will have this opportunity to express themselves.
What are the orders given to the officers of the Metropolitan Police Department, Mr. Mayor?
Well, they're the normal order in this kind of demonstration. We are prepared for any eventuality, and yet we don't want to overreact, and to the extent that we can protect life and property, both of the cities and the demonstrators, this is where we move, and we move in that kind of a fashion.
What if you'd like to guess how many people you think are here?
Somewhere between. This is horseback at this point. We'll have a hard figure a little later. But I'd say somewhere in the vicinity of 75 to 100, it appears to me, 100,000. It's far beyond our expectations, and I'm certainly glad we're on the ellipse in open space with this heat and with this condition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Mayor Walter Washington, the mayor of the District of Columbia. Robert Goralski, NBC News on the ellipse.
On the ellipse itself, there is practically no sign of policemen or National Guardsmen. Whatever crowd control has been deemed necessary so far has been handled by the demonstration's own appointed marshals. Around the Capitol and throughout the city, there are policemen in double shifts on every corner. They are regulating pedestrian traffic and trying to get the cars through also. There have been no untoward incidents reported so far in Washington. The only mishap occurring so far was when a policeman inside a precinct station accidentally dropped a canister of tear gas, and about 60 policemen came galloping out of the building, crying, sneezing, and wheezing. But as you heard Mayor Washington say a while ago, he was glad that the demonstration was being held in an open area like the ellipse because it's such a warm day in Washington. Nevertheless, they are having some medical problems with people and the heat. For a report on that, here again is Robert Goralski.
Frank, we understand that scores and perhaps even hundreds of the demonstrators out here have been affected by the heat, either by sunstroke or general heat exhaustion. One of the 60 medical aid stations around the ellipse reports 14 people have been treated for problems resulting from the weather. It's about 80 degrees right now. It's a bit of wind from the west, but basically it's extremely hot and becoming even more uncomfortable with each passing moment. Paul Bush is one of the medical aides. Paul is a dental student, I believe, at New York University. And what were you trained for, Paul? What kind of first aid assistance were you provided to render?
We were trained to treat tear gas, possibly mace. After that, just heat exhaustion, stroke, allergy, and more serious, well, play it by ear, more or less, and just use a common sense.
What do you have in your medical aid stations? You have some doctors and nurses and mostly aides like yourselves?
Yes, with every unit there's a doctor, as many nurses as possible. Only dental and medical students, as I understand.
Have you been going through the crowd here, or trying to get through the massive numbers of people here?
They dispatched 36 units all around the area. After that, the rest of us had a decision to either stay at the church where we were dispatching from or disperse amongst the crowd. And with so much going on here, it seemed senseless to stay there. So we came down. Maybe we could help any place needed.
Well, I imagine there's some difficulties in the center of the crowd. That's where it's the hottest and where the air is the roughest to breathe. How do you get to someone who's in the center of all that?
Well, an announcement was made before that most of the crowd should sit down, and if someone passed out because of heat, the people around should stand and we can locate them that way. It's hard. I think the greatest complaint when I was in the crowd was, where is the water? And I don't know.
Is there water available at all around here?
Well, there's one fountain over here to the left of the podium. And after that, I don't know.
One fountain in this entire area?
Yeah. We weren't briefed on where things were, except what we brought with us. Because once in the crowd, who knows where you can get.
Well, we have a long afternoon ahead of us, and obviously a lot of people are going to be thirsty. Robert Goralski, NBC News at the ellipse.
Thank you, Robert. We should also mention that while the major part of the demonstration is taking place in the ellipse, at other points in Washington and around federal buildings, various cabinet officials and sub-cabinet officials and members of the administration have set up tables and are talking with students, rapping, I think, is the word that the students use for it, discussing their views about the war in Vietnam and the administration's views about it. And what it boils down to is an effort to reestablish some form of communication between the government, the system, and the students who feel that it is badly in need of change and is shortchanging them. As an example of that, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare Robert Finch this morning met with about 40 students across the street from his headquarters. And he was asked, one of the students asked him what he thought had led to the deaths at Kent State University in Ohio during an anti-war protest, and Fence answered, these are his words, "It was a whole series of causative things, including some of the Agnew rhetoric." And then one of the students asked him, did the Agnew rhetoric contribute to the deaths? And Finch replied, it contributed to heating up the climate in which the Kent State students were killed. And a few moments later, standing and with his arms folded and kind of rubbing his chin, Finch said, and these again are his words, the vice president will have to stand on his own record on what he said. For a report on the general administration reaction to this rally in Washington today, here is NBC News correspondent Paul Duke.
Again today as yesterday, the administration has opened various offices here in Washington and made a number of officials available to talk to students and other demonstrators who wish to ask questions about government policy. The White House has even established a special phone line so protesters can call in and have discussions with administration officials. Officials have emphasized, both in contacts with the public and the press, that they are welcoming the protesters, and President Nixon is glad to have them here to voice their feelings. The government has even been lending a helping hand in travel and housing arrangements, which is something it did not do when there were demonstrations last fall. As if to underscore this tolerant mood, the administration made no effort to dislodge a small group of radicals who seized several rooms at Peace Corps headquarters. Here, too, the demonstrators were treated courteously, and it was decided to let them alone so long as none of the furniture or the offices were damaged. President Nixon personally has ordered high administration officials to be available to talk with the students, and one such discussion took place today outside the Health, Education, and Welfare Department, where Welfare Secretary Finch exchanged views with about 40 students. At one point, the secretary said he felt some of the speeches of Vice President Agnew contributed to the volatile atmosphere that resulted in the deaths of the four students at Kent State University earlier in the week. As Finch put it, and I quote, it was a whole series of causative things, including some of the Agnew rhetoric. The secretary went on to say the vice president's remarks had helped heat up the climate, as he put it. Finch also said, as have many other administration officials, that no one in Washington anticipated the depth of the reaction against the Cambodian invasion. And now back to Frank McGee in New York.
Thank you, Paul, and let me explain for the benefit of our listeners and viewers that if sometimes we repeat each other, it's because the men on various posts and positions out around Washington cannot always hear what all the other men are saying and may have said. So if we repeat each other, please forgive us. Right now, here is Ron Nesson at the base of the Washington Monument with a report for us.
Many of the young people who have been at the rally here on the Ellipse are streaming back from it now, apparently hot and perhaps tired of some of the speeches. A few moments ago, there were some shouts from park area to the west of the Washington Monument, and some of the young people streamed over there, and it appears that some of the demonstrators decided to take a dip in a pond over there to cool off a bit. So far, the crowd has been overwhelmingly peaceful, at least here at the rear of the rally. The demonstrators are overwhelmingly young. There are a few older people in the crowd, but not nearly as many as there were at the anti-war demonstrations in October. And the demonstrators are overwhelmingly white. There are almost no blacks. Some of the young people say the weather is too nice today to make trouble, but I think it's probably more than that. Most of the demonstrators seem to hope, the ones I've talked to, that the sheer numbers that they've gathered here and the speeches they're making at the rally will persuade the president to change his Indochina policy. Many of the young people are afraid that there will be violence, and some of them have stopped here at our television truck to ask whether we've heard anything about trouble or violence, and they ask that with some worry and concern. As I said, most of the demonstrators hope that the gathering itself and the speeches will change the president's mind on Indochina. But there is a fair amount of talk about the need to make this a continuing demonstration. And some people have talked about staying right here, staying in the park behind the White House and around the Washington Monument indefinitely. And there's also talk of doing some hard lobbying in Congress, especially in the Senate, in hopes of pushing through some kind of resolution or legislation that would restrict Mr. Nixon's power to make war in Indochina.
There's also talk of spreading the strikes beyond just shutting down the colleges. And one girl was going through the crowd passing out leaflets asking for a boycott of soft drinks, urging people to stop buying soft drinks. This would be a way to cripple a big industry. It's not that the demonstrators are angry at the soft drink industry, but by crippling an industry, they would hope to call attention to their anti-war sentiment. Also, there were some men going through the crowd passing out leaflets urging young men to send letters to their draft boards, flood their draft boards with letters in hopes of crippling the draft boards with paperwork. But overwhelmingly, I think there's a feeling of pessimism. The demonstrators don't really think that the speeches or anything else are going to change the president's mind. And now back to Frank McGee.
Thank you, Ron. It is one of the new aspects of this demonstration, at any rate, the number of students who have realized, and it seems perhaps belatedly, that one of the most effective ways to deal with Congress is in the traditional way, as if you were a lobby. And great numbers of them have gone and have searched out their congressmen, and office space proving too small, other arrangements have been made in conference rooms and even auditoriums, so that various congressmen and senators can meet with them and find out firsthand without relying on the mass media. The students don't like the way the mass media do it, and many of the congressmen don't like the way the mass media report it. That's all right. They get into direct communication with each other, and they can find out the intensity of feeling on the part of the students, and many of them are discovering that students are no more stamped out of a mold than congressmen are stamped out of a mold. There are good ones and bad ones. And there have been some promising signs in the last few days that a number of the youthful demonstrators are realizing that the system can be made to respond if they operate the system the way it was intended to operate in the first instance, and go to these men and talk with them, present your point of view, and you might be surprised how many of them you can persuade to agree with you. Sandy?
Frank, along with what you just said and along with what Ron Nelson reported, that people were drifting away from here. You know, it is interesting that the crowd now is getting rather restless. And I think that what strikes you watching them after they sat so patiently for so many hours is that they don't really come here to hear speeches. They've heard enough rhetoric, I think even of their own. They say they've heard enough speeches from the administration, but they also, they've heard these things for so long. A moment ago when we were somewhere else, the two biggest rounds of applause came for Allen Ginsberg, who is the poet of this generation, who just got up and gave him his rhythmic chant, and they loved it, and they waved the V for victory sign. Mrs. King, who just urged them to continue and then left. And the biggest applause came not just for them as symbols, but also because they didn't say very much, and they just left. And I think that you're absolutely right, that they have come, something has changed, and they are going to work down in Congress. They probably, many of them won't go home. And I think we're seeing sort of a tapering off of just coming to hear speeches. They've come here to, as they say, bear witness, to have communication with each other, but really not to hear speeches. And I think as the afternoon goes along, you'll see them drifting away. Now to Robert Gorowski.
What you see behind me are 52 acres of people. One of the doubts many people have right now is what happens to the 100,000 or so people who are collected here on the ellipse when the formal program is over. There's been some discussion by the new mobilization committee leaders that once the formal program has ended, that there'll be a march to the White House. They will go up 17th Avenue, north on that thoroughfare, to the area around Lafayette Park, and then move from that particular position, which is directly north of the White House, to the Executive Mansion itself. Now, there's a barricade of buses around the entire Executive Mansion. Actually, a several square block area around the White House has been sealed off. There's no visible evidence of any police, but they are there. There are Secret Service men in the immediate area of the Executive Office Mansion building, and there are National Guardsmen, federal troops, and others in the area not too far away from here. Whether or not this will happen or not, we just cannot say at this point. We do know that one of the things that will be brought up later in the program will be the announcement of what is called Project Undo. What the organizers of this project hope to do is to collect as many draft cards as they can from young men around the United States. These draft cards will be collected at a Princeton University headquarters, and then in turn they'll be sent to Selective Service headquarters in Washington, presumably to upset the Selective Service system. Robert Gorowski, NBC News on the Ellipse.
As we mentioned a while ago, the only policing effort that has been made on the ellipse so far has been handled by the demonstration organizers themselves, with the marshals that they appointed at least gave some brief training in crowd control. Throughout the remainder of Washington, there are a number of police on duty, concerning themselves mostly with directing the flow of pedestrian and vehicular traffic. Obviously, arrangements have been made in case trouble should erupt, and it not only would involve, if it became necessary, Washington's own police force, but it would include some National Guardsmen as well as some federal troops. The contingency planning for this sort of a situation, should it occur, and there is no evidence so far that it will, but prudence dictates that city officials be prepared for it. The coordinating effort is being made at the command post of the District of Columbia Police Headquarters, and there we have NBC News correspondent Carl Stern. Carl?
The government is operating two situation rooms, one here in the Municipal Center of the District of Columbia and another at the Justice Department. Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Civil Rights Division, who is running or supervising that situation room at the Justice Department, told me a few moments ago that their estimate is well over 100,000 people, and they wouldn't be surprised if it went to perhaps double that figure. The situation is described as cool. The Attorney General's office was pleased that very few Viet Cong flags or that sort of inflammatory thing was seen. Fire hoses have been spread through the Justice Department in case they are needed, but no troops are there as there were in November. A dozen law students from Fordham University, the Attorney General's alma mater, met for 2 hours and 15 minutes with Attorney General Mitchell, a completely unexpected meeting. They had called only yesterday for an appointment. The Attorney General said he was sick and saddened by what had happened at Kent State University, the killing of four students there, and he agreed at least tentatively to receive a proposal from the students on Monday for a student commission report on what happened at Kent State, something which would be impartial. The Attorney General defended U.S. action in Southeast Asia. He said, in his opinion, what we are doing there is definitely constitutional. The students said they could not buy it. They said there was a lack of communication between them. The Attorney General said that was not so. It was just a difference of opinion. The students complained of a lack of moral leadership by the administration. They said the president had gone to New York to comfort French President Pompidou when he was subjected to humiliating demonstrations, but the president had done nothing, for example, with respect to going to Lamar, South Carolina, when two school buses carrying Negro students were overturned in February. They said that is the sort of thing which the Attorney General could be doing. They had described the meeting as they emerged as constructive. The students said, however, that they were still miles apart. There were no heated moments between the Attorney General and the students, but no name-calling, anything like that, although the Attorney General did assail what he called nihilists. The basic dispute, as the students described it when they came out of the Attorney General's office, was that Mitchell assailed many of the young people as violent, not like you, he said, and the students said, well, we are the type you're talking about. We are the dissenters. You've got to talk to people like us. And again, the Attorney General said it's just a difference of opinion over what matters in society, what things in society are worth protecting. So the situation, as the Justice Department sees it at the moment, is cool, and the order of the day is getting together with the students and talking things out in small groups. This is Carl Stern at the Municipal Center in downtown Washington.
No one knows, of course, and it would be an extremely rash man who would try to predict at this point what might come of these new avenues of communication that at least seem to be trying to open between the government and a goodly portion of the populace, our young people. But at least the effort is being made, and communication does not always lead to understanding. The initial consequence of an attempt at communication can very often be to deepen the misunderstanding. But the misunderstanding can never be cleared away in the absence of communication, so from that extent, it is at least hopeful. As Sander Van Oker noted a while ago, several thousands of the estimated 100 or so thousand who have gathered in the ellipse have become restive, thirsty, and bored with the speeches that they've heard before and are beginning to move about, some of them leaving the ellipse and moving about the city of Washington. There was a time not too long ago when the only crowds, not too long ago really, when the only crowds that could be seen in front of the White House, particularly in the spring, were long lines of tourists waiting to get inside and go through at least a portion of the manual and maybe pick up some postcards later to show the people where they've been. Well, that's changed in recent years, and the White House has become a focal point of demonstrations against almost everything imaginable. Here's Paul Duke.
One of the more interesting things about today's rally is the way it underscores how the White House has become the great focal point of anti-war demonstrations. Most of the big rallies in recent years have taken place either at the Lincoln Memorial or the Washington Monument. But increasingly, there have been demonstrations in front of the White House, and the sponsors of today's rally insisted on being close to the Executive Mansion, their way of letting it be known they believe President Nixon was wrong in ordering American troops into Cambodia. All of this has changed the character of the White House. It used to be a relatively free and open place, with 19th century presidents frequently opening the gates to let people come in and picnic and shake hands with the chief executive. There was so little security during Herbert Hoover's days that a tourist accidentally wandered into the dining room while Mr. and Mrs. Hoover were having dinner. Now the White House has almost become an armed fortress. The security force around the mansion has been doubled in recent years. Bulletproof guard stations have been put up and visitors are tightly controlled. In recent months, the administration has moved to restrict demonstrations in front of the White House, demonstrations that usually are small but nonetheless pose security problems. For today's rally, as you have heard, an area for several blocks around the White House has been blocked off, which only goes to show that the times have indeed changed. And now back to Frank McGee.
Thank you, Paul. The ellipse where the crowd is gathered is not actually a part of the White House grounds, not proper. It's just south of the White House, and it is a lovely place in spring. It's a large oval. It's green, has some little paved paths and roads through it. And as you can see, there are those large trees around it and the White House, which is a magnificent structure, in the background. One driving along Constitution Avenue can glance up and see the White House as one drives by here. And it's a perfectly beautiful place in the spring. It's late spring in Washington now, and it's just south of here still, where many of the Japanese cherry trees blossom earlier in the spring to make such a gorgeous sight. But now we have thousands of young people, and they're not all young people, but they're so predominantly young that we slip into the habit of calling them young people or students as if there were no older people involved at all. There are some older ones there. But we have them on the ellipse. This required the personal intervention of the president. He got the District of Columbia officials to waive a restriction requiring 30 days beforehand, an application 30 days beforehand to use the ellipse for purposes like this or any other. Of course, this is a kind of a pleasant arrangement. One can imagine that if the president asks that the ellipse not be used, it will not be used, and that if it be used, that it will be used, and the administration of the District of Columbia just serves that function. It's kind of a pleasant fiction that they run that part of the Capitol grounds. They do not, although it is not, as we say, part of the White House grounds proper. While this is going on here and they're listening to the speeches and becoming a little bored with them, and nothing untoward is happening, they're at least being accorded the opportunity to present their point of view. It is not the same all over the world. In Saigon, for example, a student protest erupted today, and police jailed 76 who tried to occupy the Ministry of Education in Saigon. What they were annoyed about mostly was the closing of their schools and the continued detention of some student leaders, some of whom have been brought to trial under, according to reports, fairly barbarous circumstances. And also in South Vietnam, by the way, demonstrations of any kind there have been outlawed since 1968. Yesterday, about 2,000 students rallied in Da Nang, which is up in the north. They were protesting the slayings of their countrymen, Vietnamese, who happen to live in Cambodia, as well as the jailing of the student leaders in Saigon. And in Da Nang, 15 were arrested, and barbed wire was then strung around the Da Nang school. And the South Vietnamese government refused to let the Saigon Student Union telegraph the United States National Student Association today, expressing their sympathy for the families of the four students killed by National Guardsmen at Kent State University. Now again, here's Ron Nesson.
Many of the people are leaving the rally at the Washington Monument while or at the ellipse behind the White House long before it's over and while the speeches are going on. We'll see if we can find out why they are leaving. Pardon me,
Why are you leaving the rally before it's over?
We're looking for something to drink.
I see.
We plan to go right back. We just got into Washington, but it's kind of hot out.
Did you expect it to be this warm?
No, but I expected this many people. I'm not surprised at that.
Why are you leaving the rally before it's over while the speeches are still going on?
I'm not leaving the rally at all. The rally is taking place all over this place. I mean, it's not just located over there.
You're going swimming.
I just want to see what's happening over here because, like, I was over there, and why not go to some other place?
5,000 people there swimming around.
You don't have, you don't think very much of the speeches?
I was interested in what Coretta had to say, but, like, she didn't stay long enough to really get anything together. I'm waiting for later on in the afternoon to maybe hear William Kunstler speak or Abby Hoffman.
You say the rally is all over. What will be happening here?
I didn't say the rally was... Oh, the rally was...
All over this area.
I don't know. It doesn't seem to be very well organized as for people knowing exactly where to go and what to demonstrate against. I heard, like, at 3 o'clock there's a demonstration.
You take that one building down there.
One of the departments. I don't know which one, but I don't know if we'll be going.
Why are you... leaving the speeches before the rally is concluded?
I'm not. I'm just coming up to the monument to listen to the speeches. I was out on the edge before.
I see. Pretty hot and crowded in there?
Yeah, I'm kind of thirsty.
Can I get on TV, please? Very good. I'm a very intimate man. I mean, if you would put me on TV,
please. Are you leaving the rally before it's over?
Yes,
no,
I am.
No, I plan on going back. I've been there, and I've listened to Coretta King and Dr. Spock. And I'm going up to get some drink of water because it's pretty hot and crowded there. And there's speakers up here at the Washington Monument. Listen to it there.
Why do you keep asking why everybody's leaving?
Hey, why you don't want me
to? Are you trying to draw an answer or what?
Just wondering why you're leaving.
Oh, who's leaving? Nobody's leaving, you know. Like, you keep asking that question, why is everybody leaving?
Just leave us alone, man. We don't want you. We don't want you. We don't want you messing with us.
You're right in the center of it all.
Well, a lot of people have wandered away from the main rally area on the ellipse. But the loudspeakers do carry this far, and the people can hear the speeches back here. Now back to Frank McGee.
Thank you, Ron. And you inadvertently see some of the problems that some of our correspondents contend with. It's obvious that people are leaving the grounds, and it's obvious that he should ask why. He probably knows why, but if he said so himself, it would be his own opinion. People don't want to hear that. So he asks the people who are leaving, why are you leaving, in hopes of getting an opinion from them on why they're leaving. And then when he asks the question two or three times, somebody begins to suspect that he has some evil motive in mind in pointing out that people are leaving. And another thing, some of the times that we've had to cut away from some of the speeches and you haven't heard more of them is because some very bad language is being used. So that's part of the problem. But we can live with it. Here's Robert Gorowski now, I think, to give us a summary of some of the speeches. Bob?
Frank, most of these speeches thus far, of course, have dwelt on the problems in Southeast Asia, the war in Vietnam. They consider to be the escalation of the war into Cambodia. And a great deal of attention has been paid to the shooting of the 4 Kent State University students by National Guardsmen. This has basically been the theme, the motives that have been expressed by most of the speakers thus far. We did have a Black Panther speaker a moment ago who whipped up the crowd considerably when he began chanting and began shouting, and they began chanting, "Free Bobby Seale." President Nixon last night at his news conference indicated that he'd be perfectly aware of what was happening out here because the White House, which probably is not more than 1,000 yards away from the speaker's platform, the voice will carry, and you'll be able to pick up most of the sounds that are coming out of this area from the ellipse to the White House that short distance. So President Nixon undoubtedly is aware of the noise, the tumult, all that is happening down here at the ellipse. We still have no further indication of how much longer these speakers will go on. We know there are 30 congressmen here, representatives and senators. Two of them were supposed to be on the platform. We've not seen them as yet. Stephen Young, the Democratic senator from Ohio, and Edward Brooke, the Republican senator from Massachusetts. And, of course, Senator Brooke is the only black in the upper chamber of the United States. This is Robert Gorowski, NBC News on the ellipse.
In talking with young people, and we do as often as we can, and the press as an institution often comes under severe criticism as well, and one of the things that I've noticed that a good number of college students are puzzled about is when there is trouble, when there is violence, and when there is a physical clash with the police, the press can always come up with a figure on how many policemen were injured, but it seems to not be able to come up with a figure on how many students are injured. And they read some kind of evil motive into this. They suspect that you don't want people to know how many students were injured. And it's a little difficult to explain to them sometimes that there is a central authority to which you can go and get a figure for the police. You dial one number and you ask police headquarters how many of your men got hurt, and they can tell you. But so very often, as a matter of fact, hardly ever, is there any central place to where you can go and get information on how many students have been hurt. And it takes a good reporter a number of hours walking around from hospital to hospital or making telephone calls to accumulate that kind of data. I say all this simply to point out that the students have taken to assigning their own observers to these situations like this. So in the event trouble erupts, they can have their version of it. They can have eyewitnesses, if need be, for military or litigation that might arise from it later. And the former Attorney General of the United States, Ramsey Clark, is in charge of that particular operation for this rally in Washington today. And here with some information on that is Sandra Van Oker.
Thank you, Frank. With me is Mike Curzon, who is formerly... I'll start over again. With me is Mike Curzon, formerly on the staff of the late Senator Robert Kennedy. Mr. Curzon, what is Mr. Clark trying to do with you people walking around here today and observing?
Well, first of all, Sandra, we've got about six groups here. It's the way the division was. There are four spread out on each side of the, on each corner of the area. There's one group that's circulating through here, and there's a sixth group that's up by Lafayette Park.
What are you looking for?
Well, the objective here is, regardless of the feelings of any of us, the objective here is as neutral observers, simply to report and simply to try and keep things as quiet as we can. What we attempt to do is as we move, if we see anything, usually the banner that we wear, the legal observer one, is enough to quiet it for the time being. Ramsey started this back in the November 15 one, and it proved very successful then, and we're hoping to continue it here. So I've been looking out here. The thing that troubles me is the movement out as fast as it's occurring right now. We hoped it would stay centralized until about 4.
Why is that giving you some worry? Because one of our correspondents got some static when he kept asking people why they were doing that. Why is that worrying you?
Well, for the simple reason that I don't think we've got enough people who can move with them. The objective was we hoped that as they came out of here, they'd be able to funnel out through certain columns. That would allow the 500 or 600 of us to keep a pretty good tab on what's going on. If they start moving out in this many directions, it's going to be much tougher for us.
That would be happening about 4 o'clock, you think?
Well, we expected about 3 or 4 that they'd break up into work groups and some would move out. Some of us will stay with the work groups and others will move out with them.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mike Curzon, one of the legal observers here at the rally. Now back to Frank McGee in New York.
Thank you, Sander. So far, it has been a peaceful rally in Washington, but of course, it is a highly volatile situation. You take 100 or 150,000 people, almost all of them of one point of view, of one persuasion, and it doesn't take a great deal to cause difficulty and cause trouble. And in pointing this out, we're not predicting it. We're certainly not anticipating it. We don't want it any more than anyone else does. But as the gentleman who was talking with Sanders said then, the mere fact that they're moving out early and they don't have observers to go with them and perhaps marshals to sort of help cool it, it could lead to trouble later in the afternoon. We certainly hope it does not. We, however, will bring you periodic reports throughout the baseball game this afternoon on what is happening in Washington. And at the conclusion of the baseball game, we will have an extended report on this day in Washington. Tomorrow night, we'll have a one-hour special at 10 o'clock Eastern Time called Our House Divided. Frank McGee, NBC News. Good afternoon.